language arts has so many different components to it. Literature, analysis, composition, handwriting, reading, spelling, grammar. There's a lot involved in language arts, and I want to spend some time breaking that apart and looking at the individual parts, but today I'm going to give a broader overview of what language arts has looked like over the span of our homeschooling years. A few consistent tools that we have used in language art throughout our entire journey have been narration and copy work. Both of these have looked very different as we've progressed up, but have consistently been with us throughout our years of homeschooling. For instance, these narrations were oral narrations in the beginning, where the children would repeat back to me a story or what they had learned either directly after a lesson or a day or two after a lesson. And then sometimes I would write those down for them, and sometimes I would just listen to their oral narrations. As they transitioned and started to write, there was quite a bit of scaffolding that happened there. And this is really typical with narration at this point, this transition point of going from oral to written. The narrations become smaller, less complex, and that's because it is a challenge to multitask and think about what you're composing at the same time that you are writing down the notes of your composition. And so that's a skill that has to be learned, and there's a bump in the road here, and so the narrations become smaller and less complex. This transition was a slow, highly supported, and scaffold transition. So most of the narrations would continue to be oral narrations, and we would sprinkle or pepper in one or two written narrations, so not to overwhelm them. And then that frequency of written narrations increased and the oral decreased until we were working into the vast majority of our narrations being written. And note-taking was also thrown in there, and I'll talk about that a little later on. In addition to that, we also scaffolded in the editing process. I think I originally obtained this process of editing through Brave Writer, but this is essentially how we do it. On day one, we start out with the narration. This can be an oral narration that gets transcribed and either typed or written, or it can be a written narration. On day two, we'll go through and cut the sentences out of the paper one at a time, and then rearrange those sentences in the order that she or he wants them to be in. From this point, we will go ahead and do an expansion, or sometimes that expansion is done the following day if we feel like there are paragraph sentences that need more clarity, more information. And if not, we'll leave it how it goes. You know, each narration is slightly different. We'll also look at eliminating any of the sentences. Are there any that feel like they're just hanging out there and we don't really want to expand on those, or that they don't fit in the narration? So there's a slight bit of elimination, which doesn't take much time in comparison to the expansion. The last day is the day that we spend on true proofreading and editing, and that's where we look at grammar, punctuation, capitalization, and those spelling, those kind of aspects of the edit. After the editing process is done, that final piece either gets retyped out by me, or we go through and use it as copy work. And we don't use all of our narrations as copy work because copy work, one, entails handwriting, so I want the very best handwriting, and two, I want the length of the copy work to be something that's reasonable for the child, and sometimes the narrations can get pretty long. In the same way that our narration evolved over time, so did our copy work. In the beginning, our copy work was short, one word possibly, a couple of words, a phrase, and then it grew as the children grew and progressed through the grades. So then we were doing a few sentences at a time, sometimes a paragraph or a two at a time. Also in the beginning, we were starting with print, and then we worked our way into cursive. And I taught my children cursive through form drawing. I've not seen anyone do that, and there's not any curricula for that, but it worked really well for us. As I said before, some of our copy work was from the narrations, and they would copy it into their notebook, but a lot of our copy work was coming from books we were reading or lessons that we were learning, and in that way, I really loved copywork and narration as far as language arts because it was usually relevant and integrated to what we were already studying or reading. Another tool that we've used throughout all of our years has been Poetry Tea Time, and I don't know that you could actually call that a teaching tool, but I love poetry, and I wanted the children to learn to love poetry, which has worked out really well for us. And so we set aside time during every block for us to sit down, make cookies or cake or some treat, and have tea, though it was usually milk, and enjoy poetry. It was a great time for us to bond as a family and just take turns reading each other poetry. We did do other kinds of poetry analysis that I'll talk about later, but Poetry Tea Time was really for the enjoyment of the poetry. But like narration and copy work, these were integrated into the block for whatever we were studying. So there was a lot of reinforcement there, a lot of discussion. So that covers things like memory recall, review, spacing, interleaving sometimes. And sometimes we were doing it just to enjoy each other's company, just to have a treat, and to read some wonderful poetry. The wonderful thing about Poetry Tea Time is that it offers the connection and ambience in a language arts program, but can be as simple or as complex as you want to make it. Sometimes we were having boxed cookies and tea with tea bags. Other times I was pulling out my best china and tea set, and we were making corn fritters for our Africa unit or cake. So there's different complexity, but if you're interested, Julie from Brave Writer does have kind of a jumpstart guide to doing Poetry Tea Time. But really, it's a matter of connecting with food and drink that your family loves and some wonderful poetry.
Peers up at a fish swimming by, lifts its jumbo claw and snap, bang! Fish. Wait, fish, swim away fast. What What does that say?
I know, it's all jumbled up.
Watch out for shrimp's bubble blast.
Bubble blast.
I want to shift gears here, and we're going to move to the early years of our homeschooling. And with both children, we introduced grammar with first language lessons. If I am remembering correctly, I think this is probably second grade. Later on, we use Michael Clay Thompson, and I know he doesn't suggest starting grammar till third grade, but I want to say that we started the first language lessons in second grade for each child, maybe first. Either way, about that age was perfect for us. And if you've worked with children this age or have children this age yourselves, you know that this span, like early elementary, they're just sponges and they're soaking everything in. So this worked out really well for us. First language lessons has several chants on like parts of speech. They have a chant for helping verbs and for prepositions. And maybe all of the parts of speech, I can't remember, but that turned out to be so helpful with my son that I was adamant about repeating it with my daughter. We practiced those chants, and I don't even know that they understood what they were at the time that we were doing it, but it didn't even matter because when we got to a point where we needed to use those, they were already retained in memory. And in all of my homeschooling, anytime that I can embody the entire child, that I can create physical movement or play, I really try to do that. So with our first language lessons, we played with our gnomes. In this clip, we are practicing our prepositions where I'm talking about a phrase and she's telling me what that preposition is. In this one, we're moving our action verbs. Around third grade, we shifted and moved to Michael Clay Thompson. With my son, I used it as a curriculum. We went through and did the lessons. It's a pretty comprehensive and heavy language arts. It's wonderful. I love language arts programs where the people that are writing them really love what they're doing, and it shines through in this curricula. But it's a lot, and so you really have to pick and choose. So we didn't do all of it, but we did it as a lesson. For my daughter, I used Michael Clay Thompson's books as more of source books. So I'm piecing, doing pieces and parts, and coming up with my own lesson. But we did maintain the spirit of Michael Clay Thompson by doing a block at the beginning of the year and then just using what we've learned in that block for the remainder of the year in our other studies. A couple things that we did in the grammar blocks at the beginning of the year usually. I think we did one in third grade. I can't remember if we did fourth, but I think we repeated it in fifth grade, was to read the book Grammarland. Fabulous book. Lots of play on words and wonderful characters that are really funny. It's a great book for grammar. And then we also did the exercise that you're seeing here, where for each part of speech, we had a separate color of cardstock, and we would come up with and write down a list of different nouns and a list of different verbs and a list of different adjectives and so forth. There's a different color for each of the parts of speech. And then we cut those into slits of paper that we then use to play with the language. And that's what I love about this activity. There was lots of playing, lots of giggling and laughing, and we kept these as manipulatives for several years. It really was a fun way to learn about the parts of speech. The interesting thing is If you've used Michael Clay Thompson, he does a series of sentence analysis, one for parts of speech, one for subject, verb, etc. And then the last is phrases and clauses. And what we ended up doing, instead of writing out noun, verb, the different parts of speech underneath our sentences, was to color coordinate them with the colors that we use for the cardstock. And so those different pencils would either color the words or we would underline the words in those colors. And you know, the funny thing about this kind of teaching is that she probably could tell me the adjectives are pink to this day.
The smelly cookie, the good cookie, the cute cookie,
the furry cookie, that's gross.
The red cookie,
the gross cookie.
The frowny cookie, the lonely cookie. We have two hot cookies.
Oh, okay.
The scaly cookie. The happy cookie, the purple cookie. The bumpy cookie. Watches as the fast tree skips after the scissors. Song is an action verb.
Mm-hmm.
Eight is an action verb. I see a B. C is an action verb, so it took.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now articles.
What color is article?
A. The. A. The. A. A.
Okay.
That's cool. Walk is a noun, right?
Yeah, they're using walk as a noun there.
Walk's a noun. Garden's a noun.
Mm-hmm.
Bee is a noun.
Mm-hmm.
Bonnet is a noun. Dragon is a noun. Dragonfly is a noun.
Mm-hmm.
Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Any literary analysis that was happening in the early years was usually through our read-alouds. We may have had one or two book study. We may have done one or two of the darts from Brave Writer, but mostly it was reading aloud and then having a discussion. We also were very fortunate at this time in our lives to have a close-knit homeschooling group where reading was a culture. So there were always conversations around reading, like, what are you reading? Where are you at in that book? There were always discussions about reading, even really young kids. And there, at this time, there wasn't any differential between books that they were physically reading themselves and books that were being read to them. It was just incorporating all books in those conversations. But that atmosphere really promoted reading for my kids, and they both have enjoyed reading till about high school, when you read quite a bit for school and then, you know, not so much for fun. For handwriting with my son, we used Handwriting Without Tears, and I do like the program mostly because they keep the print pretty simple and it's very much whole child oriented. They go through and talk about songs to sing and how to use the body in the work with handwriting. But with my daughter, I wanted a more integrated approach, and we had found the world of Waldorf, and so her handwriting practice was incorporated with other aspects of her block and her lessons. It was the same way with spelling. In the early years, I used All About Spelling with my son, and we went through the book as curricula one by one. By the time my daughter started her spelling journey, it was again more integrated. We were still using a lot of the concepts from All About Spelling. It also is very whole child oriented, but our approach was more integrated, and we were using spelling lessons as part of our Charlotte Mason style language arts in our loop schedule during that time. If you're not familiar with the Charlotte Mason kind of style, I think it would also be called track classes in a Waldorf pedagogy, but they are small, succinct lessons that are, in the younger years, 5 to 10 minutes, and then that's it. The rest of it was incorporated in our main lesson blocks. Another addition that we added into the mix for spelling with my daughter in fifth grade was word study from Rooted in Language. They are another wonderful language arts curriculum writer where they love the language and it really shines through. But in working with her and her narration and in her language arts lessons, I noticed that the spelling errors that we had a lot to do with prefixes and suffixes. So I bought this packet from Rooted in Language, and I really like it. We have continued to use it throughout the year. I feel like it gives more meaning and relationships between language and words. The last activity that I want to talk about as far as elementary school is poetry analysis. And we did this really simple but very cool way of doing it. I saw a homeschooling mother that was a Charlotte Mason style homeschooler who did poetry analysis like this, and I loved it. So what I would do is print the poem in great big letters, and then we would cut the poem out word by word. I would have one printed copy on our book stand, and then we would arrange the words on the table. It made the words manipulatives. Here you can see we're using color-coded blocks to show the rhyming pattern for this, but we also could move the words over. So when we were looking at something like assonance or consonants or even rhyme, we could physically move the words and put them together and talk about what we were seeing there. Moving on to middle school, we continued to use Michael Clay Thompson for grammar. Our spelling is now incorporated in our writing. I'm not using any particular curricula or even doing spelling lessons unless I see an issue with the writing, the narration, or other writing pieces that they're doing. We also brought in some IEW, Institute for Excellence in Writing's Level B here. I have mixed feelings about this curricula, but the one thing that I do like is it gives lots of tools for the toolbox, which I will continue to use with my daughter. The other thing that I like about IEW is that it shows note-taking skills really well when in its summary work, and both of those are important skills to know for middle school. The last curricula that we used is Oak Meadow for composition, 100 ways to improve your composition and creative writing. We didn't use the entire Oak Meadow curricula, just that book. And those were things that we used for grammar and writing. In addition to that, for literature, we were using Brave Writer, or I was doing Brave Writer style activities with the books that we were choosing to read. Another aspect of language arts that we introduced in elementary school during fourth and fifth grade, but deeply expanded through middle school, is reading comprehension. One of the resources that I used for this was, again, Rooted in Language and their Trees in the Forest packet. They have some wonderful exercises in that packet, One of my favorites is in the book On the Page. I like this exercise because it really brings awareness to the active role reader has in what they're reading. So what they do is divide a sheet of paper into two columns, and on the left side, you're doing copy work from an excerpt of the book. On the right side, you're writing down for each piece of that book, your reaction to the book. Any reactions that you're having from what you're reading, any inferences that you're making or that you have to know, or anything that just comes to mind when you're reading that piece. This differs from IEW's note-taking because it is your own opinions, your own thoughts, your own reactions. And that was really helpful to us in addition to the summarizing when we started writing high school level essays where you have to have an opinion. In middle school, we also started to add more formal literary analysis. We had had conversations about what we were reading in elementary school, but this shifted to actually teaching specific literary elements and analyzing a plot, characters, and various things within that piece of literature. Rooted in Languages, annotating literary elements was recommended to me by a staff on Brave Writer. We were looking for literary singles from Brave Writer that would do more analysis kind of work, and they weren't quite there with the boomerang yet, so they suggested that we pick up this packet from Rooted in Language. And I have to say, it was a great recommendation and exactly what we needed. It gives all the things that you need and it works you through the exercises independently, but it also gave me the tools to use this repeatedly through other pieces of literature that we did, and it helped eventually in his writing. In high school, all the things that we had been working on throughout the years, grammar, copywork, reading comprehension, reading analysis, literature analysis, these things all started to come together in high school. There wasn't any real formal grammar lessons. Now our grammar was immersed in our writing and our reading, mostly our writing. So when we were editing the writing, talking about the writing, I would make notes that would include grammar. For his writing, we started with Help for High School with Brave Writer. And this is written to the student to be used in a semester's time. But I have to say, this is an example of using it as a tool and not letting the tool use you, because these exercises were phenomenal and really needed practice. So we used this curricula for a year, and it could easily be used and done again for 2 years because there's so much in it. Another resource that we used in high school for writing is a book called Teaching Arguments, and I highly recommend this book. It's just phenomenal. One of the things that she does is have an exercise very similar to a Charlotte Mason style art study where you're noticing different features in a piece of art. And it really helps convey that the more you read a piece, the more that you get out of it, the more you understand it. The other thing this book did was to frame writing in a way that showed the conversation that you were having with a group of people, and your references to what someone said is part of that conversation, and your reaction is your opinion on that part of the conversation. I saw this used again in his college courses for writing and composition, which was really interesting to me, but we really enjoyed this book. The work that we did with reading comprehension and Rooted in Languages in the book on the page really helped us in writing in conjunction with some of the exercises from Help with High School. It was easy if you're reading along, doing summary work, note-taking, and at the same time writing your reaction, writing your opinions. By the time that you finish that annotation that was taught with Rooted in Language and Brave Writers writing, your essay is pretty much written. The writing part is the easiest part. I also want to mention the World History Project from OER, and if you watched last month's post on putting together a history block, I talked a little bit about them. This was a high school program, free, online, that my son took in his 10th grade. And it was fabulous in several ways. One, it gave several tools, like contextualization tools, comparison tools, that are worksheets that they have available that helped in analyzing history. Was their specific focus, but these skills can be used for all of writing. One of those tools, among many that are really useful in other areas than just history, was the reading comprehension tool that they had that they call Three Close Reads. And we were already doing something similar in middle school, in addition to doing Rooted in Languages work. But I didn't know what it was called, and I had not seen curricula at middle school level that was applicable. But this could definitely be scaffolded to meet a younger child's need. In Three Close Reads, first you do an overview of the piece, then you look at the comprehension questions at the end, like what is the information that we're looking to obtain out of this. Then you go through and read it in its entirety, and then you go back through for any pieces of information that you might have missed. So there are at least three reads of the material. What I added to this in addition for middle school level is to go through and look at vocabulary. So we were doing an overview, we were glancing through to see if there are any words that might be more challenging or that we might not understand. Then we were reading the comprehension questions. Then we were going back and actually reading the piece. And then we were answering the comprehension questions and going back over the piece for anything we might have missed. And that pretty much concludes our journey through high school. My son also did dual enrollment, but I'm not going to include that material here. What I do want to say is that I was very happy with the transition from his high school experience to his dual enrollment community college experience. I feel like the materials that we used and the exercises that we did set him up with what he needed to be successful in his college courses, and he received an A in both of his composition courses. And I just have to say, as a homeschooling parent, there's always a little bit of doubt. Am I doing the right thing? Am I choosing the right path for my child? Are we using the right materials? Am I covering everything? And it's so helpful to have other people around you who have gone through it and been successful. It's nice to see that, and it feels really good on this side as well to see him enter into community college and be successful, have the tools that he needs to complete those classes. It's a really good feeling. So I hope this was helpful in some way, that you got something out of it. If you have any questions, feel free to ask. I'm always an open book to you as part of our community. And until next time, happy homeschooling. Thank you.